And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
With another fantasy hockey season just around the corner, we got together for Mock Draft 1.0. It's time to tell you all our findings, brought to you by our good friends over at Skip. Welcome to another edition of NHL Fantasy on Ice. Nick Alberga, Pete Jensen, and Jay Kahn with you. What's going on, Pete?
What's up, Nick? Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL. And Jake, this is such a fun time of year when rankings and projections become reality, or at least a mock draft where we could start to digest where everybody's going to fall in different rounds of drafts and stuff like that.
Love doing the mock draft with you guys. It really gets the juices flowing, right? And gets us excited for our actual drafts coming up in only a matter of time. And a lot of interesting picks made throughout the course of the mock draft. So Nick, looking forward to getting into a few of these debates with you guys.
Yeah, Jake, interesting is probably the word I would use to describe the mock draft process. It took way too long. I don't know how people are doing their drafts these days. We got to cut the time. But the breakdown's pretty simple. 12 teams. I got together with Pete, Jake, and Anna Dua. We had three teams per person, so 12 in total, 10 total positions, right, Pete? Two centers, two wingers, 3D, one util, and two goaltenders, right, Pete?
Right, so it's technically five forwards because utility, everybody in the draft picked their utility position as a forward, so five forwards, 3D, two goalies. Defensemen, I think, in this mock, guys, right, became a big priority. Guys, you know, that were going late in our top 200 ended up being taken in this 120 player mock draft. So I think it puts the priority on the position. A lot of forwards that I think are going to be really valuable, maybe even close to point per game players, didn't even get selected in this mock. So the pool is super deep, maybe deeper than ever, right, Nick?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think I wanted to go over some of our findings and trends, obviously, as we went through Mock Draft 1.0. Jake, that was the biggest take. We have a little group chat going during the draft. And I would say a significant drop in talent, Jake, past the number 60, a top 60, top 65. You look at the board, you're like, what am I doing with the rest of my draft here?
Well, like Pete said, there was some forwards left on the board, obviously, based on how the rosters were constructed that I still had some interest in when we closed up the draft. I thought, yeah, there's still a few players I'd like to take, but it is a big drop off. Like, you really want to hit on those first few picks, those stud players up front, specifically with the back end, with the defenseman. There's a huge drop off after you get past the power play one defenseman, and you're kind of looking and thinking, I don't even want some of these players on my roster. So I think it's important to maybe go out and grab one of those stud D-men. Pete, I don't know if you agree with this, but to go out and grab a Quinn Hughes, a Cale Makar, one of these top defensemen early, so you're not scrambling for one later in the draft.
Right. I actually reached for Evan Bouchard at 13, so just the tail end of the first round, early second. I had a wraparound. I took JT Miller at 12, very safe guy for category coverage, and then Evan Bouchard at 13. Wanted to ask you guys your opinion on what is the best fantasy team in terms of like a stacked team out there. Is it Colorado that had three in the top 10? Is it Edmonton, three in the top 13? And I think like five in the top 50, or the Rangers had like around the top 56 players. So add them to the conversation, right, guys?
I'm going to say Edmonton here, guys. I just think with the depth that they have, obviously Colorado's got the studs up front, Pete, like you mentioned, the three in the top 10, but Edmonton's got the top dogs, obviously, and now Zach Hyman's in this conversation up there as well, and Evan Bouchard, and you know, even Stuart Skinner to an extent as a goaltender is now a G1, and you know, you go deeper in drafts, you've got some depth players there as well. So I'm going to say Edmonton, despite the fact, Nick, that Colorado obviously has some studs in that first round.
Yeah, there's a lot of studs across the board, but it's like if you play fantasy football, which I don't, everybody wants a piece of Patty Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. Jake, I know you did a bunch of drafts. You just want a piece of that. And along those lines in Edmonton, you got McDavid, you got Draisaitl. Zach Hyman has entered the conversation. This time last year, we were hot and heavy over Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. There's like a 40-point drop with that player. I just wonder who's going to be the next guy in Edmonton to have a season out of nowhere. Evander Kane sounds like he's going to start. You know, in terms of injury there. So like there's a couple guys, and there's a couple opportunities there, but I think profoundly, Pete, it has to be the Edmonton Oilers just because of where they went and who they have up the middle, specifically in McDavid and Draisaitl. I just want a piece of that right now.
It's true, but even in the later rounds with Edmonton, you can jump on a Matthias Ekholm. He was a stud for them in the playoffs, one of the best possession players in the league, and plays with Bouchard. He's going to get a sprinkle of that maybe 90 plus point total when it's all said and done. And Jeff Skinner could have a monster bounce back season and be a point per game like he was just a couple seasons ago in Buffalo. I know Jake likes Victor Arvidsson. There are a couple other like deep sleepers on that team. But yeah, I mean, I think the Rangers like technically have the deepest number of players around the top 75 when you count Kreider and Trocheck and guys like that who have really been strong year after year. But I think the Oilers take the cake.
A lot of value across the board. I know producer Bob Bender, his big time question coming into this fantasy season, who's going number two behind Connor McDavid? And surprise, surprise, Jake. And unfortunately, she's not here to defend herself, but Anna Dua got the second overall pick. She went with Austin Matthews coming off a 69 goal season. How much did that surprise you, Jake?
She did. And I was sitting there at three and I'm like, Nathan MacKinnon fall right into my lap. Thank you very much. That being said, I'll defend Anna a little bit on this one. If she had taken Nathan MacKinnon at two, I would have taken Austin Matthews at three. I think he would be my third guy off the board with that goal scoring ability, how much he shoots the puck. You know, I mean, his ability to go chase 70 goals this year. So I don't hate the Matthews pick at two. I actually think you could make a case for him at two. I just personally have Nathan MacKinnon ranked as my second player. So I was more than happy to get him there at three.
I'm right there with you. I think the debate is closer than people think. Having said that, Pete, I just think MacKinnon is slightly more capable of a stronger category coverage. I just think across the board, his fantasy numbers translate a bit better. And that's why I probably feel a bit safer taking him after Connor McDavid and you know, before, after, you know, number two, pretty much. So that's probably the way I would slot it.
I would say that MacKinnon has a significantly higher point ceiling when it's all said and done compared to Matthews. And we saw it last year when he won the Hart. And he got up into the 130s and stuff like that. Really dynamic, even though Colorado's secondary scoring, I think, is a little weak this year. Those guys are going to continue to be the driving force every shift with Makar and contract year Mikko Rantanen. I personally, Jake, would go McDavid 1, MacKinnon 2, and Drysdale 3. Good news on that front for Edmonton, right, that he wrapped up that contract.
Yeah, it could go both ways, right? I know Nick loves a contract year. We'll probably get into a couple of those throughout the course of this episode as well. So the fact that it's no longer a contract year for Draisaitl, does that hurt him a little bit? I don't think so. I just think he's a stud, and any piece of that Oilers offense, you're going to want it. So I think you can make a case for any of these top or the players ranked 2 through 6, basically. I think you could make a case for them at 2. That's, do you guys think that it cuts clean with that top 6, or is there another name that you would throw in there? You know, maybe a Jack Hughes, a Kirill Kaprizov, something like that, Nick?
Yeah, I know you raised some eyebrows, Jake, when you took Jack Hughes at 7. But again, all this is so subjective on your rankings. And obviously, we follow NHL.com. You guys do a fantastic job over there. But for me, you know, specifically, I have Jack Hughes in my top 10. But I think there's like that buffer zone outside of maybe, you know, 6 to like 15, we'll say, guys, where like there's a variety of different names and routes you can go, like Mikko Rantanen. I know he's been part of that conversation. Mitch Marner's a guy who fell in this draft, who I think is going to have a monster contract year. I think there is a bigger debate to be had, Pete, once you get past like the 6 to 7 range.
It's true. And even Sidney Crosby fell to 16. Yep. I was considering him where I took Mikko Rantanen at 8. And I know Kaprizov went after him, and then first defenseman Makar. And then, you know, I know later on Shesterkin went 17 right after Crosby. So there's little room for you know, differentiation. I think that like Crosby and Ovechkin are available lower than they've ever been for some reason. And Nick, I know you got Ovi at 40. I mean, that's tremendous value right there.
Guys, I called it the legacy stack. I got Crosby at 16. I got Ovechkin at 40. If there's one thing I know from a fantasy owner's perspective, Jake, that I'm going to get from Alex Ovechkin this year, it's goals and shots on goal. Like, mark my words, he is hunting for a record. He's going to shoot the puck this season.
Well, and I like that he comes in with a target. I haven't been in on Ovi in fantasy in years because I think he's still got overdrafted based on his name. But now he's starting to slip to a point where I think there might actually be value in Alex Ovechkin. And I'm going to pull the trigger on this guy in his late 30s. But I love that he's got that target in mind and maybe a chip on his shoulder. Last season did not go well for Ovechkin. So I have to hope he comes in a little bit of better shape. It was a relatively long offseason and hit the ground running. I would not be surprised, Pete, if we pull up the stat sheet a month and a half into the season and Alex Ovechkin's right there at the top of the league leaders in goals.
I could totally see it, and a better supporting cast just helps that cause, right? From the back end out, Logan Thompson, Mangiapane, all these guys, Dubois maybe, you know, could play a little bit with him and resurrect Dubois' career a little bit. You'd like to see that. So some options brewing in Washington to get that done as early as this season. Ovi's going to be charged up.
You talked about Logan Thompson. Guys, I want to jump into the inevitable goalie run that happens every fantasy draft. I think we all have varied opinions on how to attack the crease, but we saw, Jake, five goalies go in round three. I think that's probably going to be a theme in fantasy drafts as we get closer to the NHL season here, where you see one guy go and you have to sort of get your marquee stud. But I'm so careful because the position has just become so volatile over the last couple of years.
No, me as well. And I mean, you don't know which one of these goaltenders is going to lose their job like a month into the season. So we saw Swayman, Ottinger, Hellebuck go back to back to start the third round in our mock. I believe Bobrovsky and Saros also went in that round as well. I think you're splitting hairs between all those goaltenders, really. I personally still like Connor Hellebuck a lot. I understand some are calling for some regression in Winnipeg, and I could certainly see that, but I don't think it's going to be drastic. I still think they're going to win their fair share of games, and I feel like Hellebuck's going to put up some monster numbers. I do worry a little bit about Sergei Bobrovsky, guys, because he has been somewhat inconsistent in the regular season over his career, and he has played a lot of hockey for a guy in his mid-30s over the last couple of seasons. So, Pete, don't you think Florida would have to get Bobrovsky at least a little bit of rest this year if they want to make it three straight Stanley Cup finals?
You would think, but I still think he's going to play like 50-plus games, no doubt about it, in a million years. So it's going to be fun to see these eight guys and where they go in fantasy drafts. I'm talking about up until about Georgiev, who I took at 45, and I thought was a really safe pick there, right? He has led or been tied for the NHL lead in wins two straight seasons now for that same bedrock, consistent Colorado Avalanche team.
Well, Pete, I'll tell you, if Georgiev can't figure things out this season, he won't be there long term. Okay. I think Colorado obviously has some issues in between the pipes. If he can't make the saves, the wins are great. If he can't make the saves, I think they're going to move on to somebody else. But yeah, I do think that's a safe pick. You're going to get victory, certainly, with the Colorado Avalanche. I was just going to mention as well on Florida, I think if you feel that way, and it's understandable to feel that way on Bobrovsky, maybe you handcuff it with like a Spencer Knight. My big bold take in Florida's crease. I think we're going to see Spencer Knight, Jake, finally take that next step. But you can't forget how difficult it is for young goalies coming into the league. Devon Levi was a classic example last year where there's just so much focus and they never truly live up to expectation. I think this is the year for Spencer Knight.
Yeah, and I think Florida has to give him the opportunity. I do. I just think Bobrovsky's played way too much hockey. We had this conversation with Vasilevsky. I felt like every year Tampa kept making it on these long runs, and it's like, okay, when is he going to wear down a little bit? Maybe we have seen it the last couple years with him. So I just think Florida has to play it smart with a guy in his mid-30s that's played that much hockey. And Vasilevsky as well, I think, is a fascinating conversation here as well, Nick, because I think there's some value. I think he's kind of getting pushed out of that top-tier goaltender conversation. And I still feel like there's a lot of value in him.
The big cat. I do think they're a sleeper in general, something I wanted to get into here. But I think you look at Tampa, I can never discount that team. I know Stamkos is gone. I know a guy like McDonough is back in the mix. Sergachev, Pete, who we like, is now with Utah. But as long as they have those big boys, Kucherov, Point, Hedman, Vasilevsky, John Cooper, I from a fantasy perspective, I'm still going to be all over the Tampa Bay Lightning. I'm just a big fan.
Right, and we even forgot them in the earlier conversation about most stacked fantasy teams in the top 50. They got five in the top 43. And I think that I went ahead and reached for Jake Guentzel. I love that guy. I've always liked him with Crosby. And I think that he could be even more expanded, maybe even challenge 100 points, Jake, playing with Kucherov and Hedman on the power play. I mean, those guys are going to be working it. Everything that used to channel through Stamkos is now going to Guentzel, baby.
Yeah, I think we're all fascinated what that power play is going to look like the first game Tampa plays, right? Where is everybody going to be slotted? I think we know where Kucherov's going to be, where Hedman's going to be, likely where Point's going to be, but how do they use Guentzel there? I'm also fascinated how they use him even strength, what those line combinations look like. So I trust John Cooper to put the guys in the right places and for that team to figure it out, Nick.
It's funny, not to name drop, I was texting with Coop just yesterday, and I said there's no debate on who's running the power play this year, right? Last year was Hedman or Sergachev. I know he gave me a bit of heat on the radio there because I talked about it, but this year there's no debate. It's going to be Victor Hedman, but you're so right. I am in on Guentzel. I think he's going to be a big hit when it comes to Tampa. Let's talk some reaches brought to you by our good friend over at Skip. There's a, you know, a significant amount of guys, I think, in our draft that we wondered about, did we reach on it? Jack Hughes comes to mind at 7. I took Crosby at 16. Bedard goes 31. Reinhardt 36. I think that's a fascinating file in fantasy hockey this season. Sergachev at 47. I took Shea Theodore pretty early at 68 in a contract year. Anybody stand out for you, Pete, in some of those names?
No, I think that Gensel play, as much as I like it, it is, you know, he's always been more of an even strength guy. So like that's a fascinating thing for me. Bedard still at 31. That could be a reach. I mean, he had like one of the worst plus minuses in the league last year. He plays for a bad team. They're improved, but they're still bad. So, you know, maybe hold your horses on taking him just that early, but someone's going to do it. So it's one of those things where like, you know, someone is going to reap the benefits if this guy really skyrockets this season. But yeah, it was a fun top 50 or so. You know, I know you're talking about reaches, but I was surprised like that Reinhardt fell that far and Jason Robertson fell to 44 when his ADP is 28. So it's really interesting. You should check it out on NHL.com/fantasy.
I think I'll own a couple of those reaches, specifically Jack Hughes at 7, which, hey, I'm planting my flag in the ground, guys. I think Jack Hughes has potential to bring back top three value when this season's all said and done. And I'm looking for ceilings. I'm willing to take some risks and jump up and take some guys. And Connor Bedard's sort of the same. I totally hear what Pete's saying. It's a bad team. I still question the surrounding cast, although they did make some improvements with the surrounding cast in the offseason. I just believe in the talent of the player. And I think 1 year is enough of a warm up for Connor Bedard to just take a massive, massive leap this year. So I'll own a couple of the reaches, Nick. That's something I always like to do.
Is Swayman a reach at 25 from Nick? I don't think so, because he's going to have the workload to himself, but he still doesn't have a contract as of record time, and taking him over Ottinger, Hellebuck, Saros even. Saros probably going to play 60 games this year, as is Hellebuck.
Yeah, as Jake brought up earlier on, I think there's a couple different guys that I'd feel comfortable taking in that range. In this instance, I went with Swayman. I'm always careful, but having said that, Boston's been the model of consistency for like the last 15 years. But Jake, I liked your pick of Jonas Korpisalo.
Yeah.
I think if there's one thing we've learned with Boston, they're not afraid to use both guys. This is dating back to like the Tuukka Rask era, and I think Korpisalo is going to play a lot more than people think. And never underestimate the pressure of a new contract. How many times have we seen in this league, regardless of the dollar amount that Jeremy Swayman gets here, but there's no pressure behind him now. How is he going to react to that? I have a lot more question marks, weirdly enough, regarding Swayman coming into this season, Jake.
I'm glad you brought that up, Nick, because that was certainly one of my late reaches, was to grab Korpisalo and throw him on a roster. I think for a couple different reasons. You kind of alluded to it right there with the fact that Boston has had a lot of success splitting with Swayman and Omark. Who's to say they don't do something similar with Korpisalo? I think we're all just assuming car keys are going to get handed over to Swayman. I don't know. You got two goaltenders that can play well. Why not split the starts, keep the goaltenders fresh? And I also think he's just an excellent handcuff. If something were to happen to Swayman, then you've got the starter on the Boston Bruins. And I think Korpisalo, Pete's going to have a lot of success in that Bruins system. So maybe you don't get as many starts as some of these other goaltenders, but the starts you get, I think, are going to be quality.
Well, a fan was actually asking, and a fan question delivered, of course, by our good friends over at Skip, was asking, who are some goalies to target late in the draft if you don't want to take any in the first 6 to 7 rounds? To answer that question from one of the teams I took, there was one team where I avoided goalies early, and I ended up getting Kochetkov and Aiden Hill from two pretty strong teams in Carolina and Vegas, guys. So, like, I don't feel 100% safe with that strategy, but you can get some good goalies in the middle to late rounds.
Yeah, I would say Philip Gustafson is another guy. And Peter was going to ask you, how much were you smiling when I took UPL? I did that for you, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, he deserves to be taken in the top 100 in a fantasy draft after last year. Again, just worry a little bit about the team. I think Ruff will make him a little better, fringe playoffs, but he could lose that job in a jiffy, right? Like to Devin Levi, or even if Reimer's playing well and he's struggling, we've seen Reimer get starts in recent years for a variety of teams. So I'm not completely sold on him, but I like the bold call.
I like your Aiden Hill pick, Pete. That's a name I think I'm going to be targeting. I was burned by him, honestly, in a couple of leagues last year, but it had nothing to do with his quality of play. It was really just injuries, right? I think he had three or four injuries. It felt like as the season went on, he could just never stay healthy. But I think if he's healthy for a full year, I believe in what Vegas is doing. So Aiden Hill, maybe even Samsonov can come in and grab some starts. But I like Hill as a, you know, a later round goalie play.
Bob Bender's here to keep track of the throwback phrases that Pete Jensen has had thus far this season. We have in a jiffy and hold your horses. We're going to have to take a look at what else comes up here the rest of the way, Nick.
Fair enough. I was going to add, I like that point on Ilya Samsonov, guys. In that system and Bruce Cassidy's system, again, the position has become so volatile where teams are feeling comfortable using more than one guy. And I think we'll see that across the board as we continue along here over the next couple of years. You talked about Connor Bedard earlier. Guys, I want to touch on the rookie crop. I know it was a unique draft, only 120 players selected. Pete, just two rookies, and one of them wasn't your guy, Matvei Michkov. So Macklin Celebrini you took at 108, and then I went completely off the board because there's absolutely no depth on the blue line. And I took Lane Hutson 112 because Mike Matheson's in a contract here. He's going to get dealt, in my opinion, at some point.
I think Hutson has that type of ceiling, especially if he's power play one with Suzuki, Caulfield, Patrick Laine, and Slavkovsky. That's a nice little quintet there, guys, if he earns that spot, Hutson. So, and he played at BU, right? So star-studded group there, and of course now looking ahead to the rebuild for Montreal, it's a sneaky play. We saw Luke Hughes, Brock Faber finish in the top three for the Calder last year. Hudson's the only guy I see that's worthy of finishing that high in the Calder this year.
And he actually scared me off of Matheson late. I was torn between a few defensemen to round out some rosters. And I actually loved Mike Matheson last year. I thought he was one of the more sneaky, valuable fantasy defensemen that no one was really talking about because Montreal's no good, but he quietly just put up a lot of points. So Nick, you could be onto something there with a possible trade piece. I could certainly see something like that, but maybe early in the year, there's still value with Mike Matheson as they, you know, kind of ease Lane Hutson into that role.
Yeah, it's exactly what I see. I think breaking out of camp, I mean, it's never, you should never, you know, be a foregone conclusion that a young player is going to crack a roster. We think Hudson's going to make that team, but I think they're going to shelter him at the beginning. And it's a big transition going from the college game to the NHL game. Having said that, he looked pretty damn good in a couple outings last year to wrap up the season. But that's the way I see it. I think Matheson starts running PP1. And then at some point in time, Lane Hudson's ceiling, as you mentioned, Pete, he's just way too talented to keep him down. I think at some point he's going to be running the first power play unit. But another guy, obviously, I think that's big in terms of rookie, Pete, that maybe he's not getting as much love as he should, is Logan Stankoven. Like, I know a lot of the focus has been on Celebrini, it's been on Michkov, but would we be shocked at all if it's Logan Stankoven who wins the Calder Trophy this season? I wouldn't.
No, we have him projected for the most points in the low 60s of any rookie. You can find all our forward, D, and goalie team win projections on NHL.com/fantasy. Again, use these lists depending on your league format going into your draft. So I think it's a fair thing to say he's the safest to get there, especially after Pavelski retired. Like, he can move up to that top line potentially even.
Stankoven, I mean, I think he's got the best opportunity to just hit the ground running, guys, in terms of like lack of pressure in that lineup as compared to other players that might be, you know, used it in a bit of a higher role. Dallas does like to spread things out, which would maybe worry me a little bit about the season-long point total, but having played a little bit, having played in pressure situations, big games, I like the spot for Stankoven. Nick, I don't know if you have any other rookies that you've got your eye on, but Stankoven is certainly one that jumps out to me as a player I'd be willing to make a play on.
Yeah, those are the big ones. And then there's going to be guys on the periphery. Like, for example, if like Easton Cowan makes the Toronto Maple Leafs, his deployment, will he be in the bottom six? Will he be in the top six? Like, they, you know, guys are going to be put in positions to succeed. So certainly monitoring that. I was just going to add, like, dual position eligibility is so big in this day and age. And I think the one trend that I did see once again, that guys has been a theme for many, many years in fantasy hockey, specifically if you have a draft where you have different positions, there's so much depth up the middle. Like, I thought I got really good value in Mark Scheifele and Elias Lindholm, who's going to be centering that top line, we think, with a guy like David Pastrnak and maybe Pavel Zacha on the other side. I think if you wait and take patience and exercise patience, as you say, when it comes up the middle, Pete, I think you can find a lot of value because a lot of wingers, there's more centers than wingers.
Yeah, and you could even get like a Brady Tkachuk, who's for some reason yep. center left wing eligible, Tage Thompson, center right wing, Draisaitl. That's why I have liked him at three or two for years, is because he's center left wing eligible. Keep an eye on the eligibility, and it doesn't really matter. If you're hoisting the fantasy championship trophy, Jake, at the end of the day with Brady Tkachuk as your number one center, even though he plays mostly left wing for Ottawa and Ottawa misses the playoffs, but you're fine and dandy with Tkachuk leading the way for your fantasy team with all those categories.
Well, yeah. And speaking of dual position eligibility, I feel like I got the steal of the draft late fourth round going into the fifth round. Guys, I'd be curious your take on this. But Timmy Stützle at 46 and Tage Thompson at 51. These are guys we were talking about first, second round last year. Okay, disappointing seasons, but still on teams that should push the pace offensively and score a lot of goals. Nick, what do you think about Stützle and Tage Thompson? Are you interested in a bounce back from either one of those players?
1,000%. I saw you select both players, and I thought back to last fantasy season. I have a long, long memory, Jake. You know this. I worked with you for 8.5 years at NHL Network Radio. I remember things, and I remember back this time last year, we talked about Robertson, talked about Stützle, we talked about Tage Thompson. I think fantasy owners, Pete, are going to find insane value on these guys because it's so easy to forget, you know, a track record, what these guys have done in the past, not far removed from what they've done. So I probably would creep up and draft Stützle and Thompson and Robertson, those three guys specifically ahead of where their ADP is right now, because I believe in them. If you believe in a player, go after them.
Right, and back to the conversation about reaches, like Sergachev was a reach based on ADP by Anna. I'm all in on Sergachev to lead Utah to the playoffs as early as this season and be their clear power play one guy over Durzi, who you took pretty late, I think one of you guys. But I think that Sergachev in the top 50 overall might be pushing it a little bit just because he's going away from that elite Tampa offense to the great unknown right up there in Utah.
Well, speaking of defensemen too, guys, and bounce back candidates, we talked a little bit about the Dallas Stars. I know Robertson's come up and we've talked Stankoven from a rookie perspective. How about Miro Heiskanen? I picked him to win the Norris last year, guys. He did not win the Norris, so I was certainly wrong on that. He didn't put up anything close to the offensive numbers that you need to win that award, but I still love the player. He's going to be out there a lot. I think Dallas should score enough. So I don't know, just seeing where Heiskanen slipped in this mock draft to me, I'm willing to get burned again on Heiskanen and Nick. Do you think there's some value there?
Yeah, unequivocally. I mean, it's worth the value again, because we talked about the run of defenseman and the premier defenseman in fantasy hockey. In fact, 10 D went in the first 57 picks. After that, I mean, just across the board, take your pick. Is it going to be Thomas Chabot? Is it going to be a Matheson? Is it going to be a Chris Letang, who I think we found a bit of decent value on? I think you're able to reach in some of these guys. Like I even mentioned Shea Theodore. It's amazing what guys do in contract years. I wouldn't sleep on Shea Theodore. He's an excellent defenseman. I think he's going to have a monster year, put him in line for a fresh new contract. So I've got no problem doing that and reaching for a guy, Pete, just because of everything we spoke about. There's just not as much depth on the blue line in fantasy hockey.
It's very true. And Gus Forsling, to me, is one of my must-have players in all of fantasy in drafts. You're going to have to reach for him maybe around the top 75 overall. He went at 67, right? Sandwiched between Heiskanen and Theodore. But like, to me, that's untapped potential. He is the single most underrated puck possession player in the league. And now Montour is gone. So he can maybe even get a sniff of power play one with Barkov and Reinhardt and all these guys. So try to get Forsling by any means necessary on your fantasy team this year.
Well, yeah, and speaking of Montour, Pete, we know where he went. Obviously, he goes to Utah, and now there's competition, I guess, between him and Vince Dunn. Are we just kind of throwing a dart and guessing on that if you're making that selection? I personally lean Montour to think he's going to get the power play time, but Vince Dunn is comfortable there, so maybe he's got the inside track.
Jake, it's called a fade. I'm still trying to figure out what the Seattle Kraken are doing, man. I don't know. That Chandler Stephenson contract, I love the player, but that's a lot of dough, and I wish I was Chandler Stephenson. But I'm probably fading Seattle in general, maybe outside of Matty Beniers. But yeah, that's going to be a polarizing conversation. Who runs the first power play? You know, you just gave Montour all that money, but then you look at the body of work, the track record. When it comes to Vince Dunn, you start to wonder. Just to wrap, Pete, we owe some teams some apologies, namely the Anaheim Ducks. Not one single Duck was selected of the 120 we picked here.
Right. And that proves like what we were talking about in the previous show, right? The lists episode, all those sleepers and breakout guys, McTavish and Carlson and Gauthier as a Calder sleeper and Lucas Dostal, they will be available outside the top 150 or so. And I think this mock draft probably cements that. So definitely, yeah, we apologize to the Ducks, but they have a nice trajectory with all that young core.
And we barely touched the Flyers as well, guys. I did grab Travis Konecny, who I actually think has some sneaky value around a point per game. I could see him having a nice season there in Philly. So past the top guys, I think he's a name to keep an eye on. Nobody wanted anything to do with Flyers goaltending, and I don't really blame anybody for not wanting to go down that road, especially with how Sam Harrison ended the season last year. But hey, maybe fresh start for him, or maybe we get a good season from Fedotov.
Yeah, the only way I'm back in, maybe Bernie Parent comes back, then I'll be all in on the Philadelphia crease. Top five players not ranked in the mock draft 1.0, or not selected, I should say. Tippett, Fiala, Horvat, Hurdle, Keller. You will find value late in your draft, right, Feet?
Yeah, I guess there's nothing sexy about taking Owen Tippett in the top 120, but he's probably going to finish in the top 75, guaranteed. Maybe even the top 50 with that category coverage. So we definitely overlook Tippett a little bit in favor of those younger guys like Celebrini. I was thinking about Tippett a lot in the late rounds. Two other guys that plummeted in this draft, Thatcher Demko and Brad Marchand, with the injury concerns. So you can't really blame us, but which situation are you more worried about, Jake? Probably Demko, right?
Probably Demko. Yeah, it just so many mixed reports coming out. Like one week you get a report saying, oh, he's trending up, he looks like he's going to be good for the season. Then you get another report saying he's going to be dealing with this for his whole career and he's gonna have to play differently. And I'm thinking, this is not great. This is not a situation I want a part of. So look, I guess if he can figure it out and stay relatively healthy, there's some value there. But I just think I'm not willing to take that risk with an already injured goalie. Brad Marchand, he's the type of guy that's built different, even though three surgeries scares the heck out of me and should scare the heck out of anybody. Maybe it'll be a good thing for him and he can come in with a fresh slate feeling healthy. So I still have some interest in Marchand, Nick.
It's funny the way Marchand plays, like he's the model of consistency, which is a bit surprising. I think he's going to be okay. I would feel very comfortable taking Brad Marchand even as early as number 40. It has to be Thatcher Demko. And unfortunately for that organization, everything rides in the health of Thatcher Demko. If I were to look up the term regression in the dictionary right now, I think I'm looking at the Vancouver Canucks. I'm looking at Rick Tocchet. Jake, we had this convo last summer with the New Jersey Devils. They were winning the Stanley Cup and they missed the playoffs, Jake.
Yeah, well, there's going to be some regression wars early in the year. Vancouver, yeah. Winnipeg, I think those are a couple teams everyone's sort of looking at to say, you can't keep this up again, can you? And I do think there's going to be regression in some extent for both of those teams. Will it be enough to miss the playoffs or anything like that? That remains to be seen. But it is tough to keep up that pace again over a full 82-game season.
Certainly lots of fascination as we inch closer and closer to puck drop on the 24-25 NHL season. Pete, let's look back at what we've done the last couple weeks here.
Yeah, so we did the projections episode. We did the rankings episode, off-season movers. A couple things have changed, but not really all that much. So we're going to dig a little deeper in the coming shows as well. But we also have the lists episode with the rookies, bounce backs, breakouts, and sleepers and deep sleepers. So much to digest. Do not go into your fantasy draft without listening to every single one of these episodes.
There you go. That's the plug I was looking for. Go back, click play for your guy, Bob Bender. He needs the plays. Go back and listen. Prepare yourself for the fantasy draft with us, NHL Fantasy on Ice, Nicholas.
Our jobs depend on it, folks. Thanks to producer Bob Bender, as you heard there. For Pete Jensen and Jay Conn, I'm Nick Alberga. You've been listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice, delivered by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.